From the studios in the Communication Arts and Sciences Building on the campus of Michigan State University, this is MSU Today. MSU Today is a lively look at MSU-related people, places, events, and attitudes put into focus by Russ White.
Thank you, Lynn. At 4:06, following the latest news, Kirk Heinze hosts.
We recently spent a very enlightening morning at the 2017 Energy Summit in Grand Rapids, where we interviewed several winners of the Michigan Battle of the Buildings Biggest Loser competition for 2016. These organizations have reduced energy costs, and we're going to learn how they did it. We'll begin with the executive director of the U.S. Green Building Council, West Michigan Chapter, which manages and hosts the Biggest Loser competition.
Broadcasting from the campus of Michigan State University, this is 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Here's Kirk Heinze.
Russ and I are at the 2017 Energy Summit in downtown Grand Rapids to applaud energy efficiency and to meet some of the 2016 Michigan Battle of the Buildings Biggest Losers, companies and not-for-profit organizations who have significantly reduced their energy costs while maintaining efficiency, comfort, and yes, profitability. Who better to kick off our coverage of this event than Sherry Holman, Executive Director of the organization that manages and hosts the Battle of the Buildings competition? That would be the U.S. Green Building Council, West Michigan Chapter. Give us a snapshot of what's going on today.
So we are celebrating our 2016 Biggest Losers. There's 10 categories. We're awarding first and second place. So there's 20 Biggest Losers here today. And just for a little context, Biggest Losers is percentage of energy loss. So in this context, Biggest Loser is a good thing.
Yeah, notice we're going to be talking to folks. The energy savings range from some rather large buildings at 5 or 6% to some smaller buildings. I think one of our winners is almost at 40% in 1 year.
39-something. Wow, I know. Pretty impressive. Yeah, overall, these competitors have reduced 22,141 tons of CO2e and more than $2.4 million saved.
How many different companies and how much square footage does that represent?
This year, we have over 93 million square feet. And I believe our number for 2016 is about 520 buildings. I don't have that right in front of me, but it's right around there. 457 were in 2016. So each year, we're definitely seeing the growth. From our inaugural year, we had 11.5 million square feet. Today, we stand here with 93 million square feet. So, you know, you can't be unhappy with growth like that.
In general terms, what are some things that most of these companies and organizations are doing to reduce their energy use?
You know, that's the beauty of this, because it's so diverse. There's some winners that did, you know, behavioral occupant changes where they're just being better stewards of their energy. And there's some that, you know, have installed a building management system. So, you know, we're seeing a vast variety of things that people do. And, you know, you never know what it will take to be the biggest loser, because it may be less than you think.
There's a lot on the lighting front, but there's also a lot on, like you said, employee training programs, just people turning off the switches when they go home from work at night. Some low-hanging fruit, actually.
Yeah, that's exactly what we call that, is low-hanging fruit. And, you know, sometimes some of these companies have to dig a little deeper and do a larger project. But in most companies, it's there. There's opportunity for, you know, I don't have exact figures, but I'm going to guess 90% of our businesses out there across Michigan have some sort of opportunity, something they could be doing to shave energy cost.
Your array of sponsorships for this continues to grow, and it's very impressive.
You know, our first ones in was Consumers Energy the first year. DTE was not far behind in year two. This year, we're welcoming in Michigan Energy Office, so we're really excited about that new relationship and what that might do for the program.
Winning this competition or being a finalist in this competition becomes sort of a bragging point for these companies, and I would imagine it motivates their competition to get involved.
I think so, yeah. And they're telling them to get involved, too. So, you know, you have these organizations who are telling their competitors, you should do this. So that's really cool. And the fact that they're able to kind of sit in the same room and share information back and forth. And that's what's, I think, so interesting. And the appeal to this is that it is building owners and operators talking to building owners and operators. And somehow that level of trust, you know, they're not salesmen, they're not speakers, but they want to share their story, and I just appreciate so much them being able to break outside that box, because it's not easy to public speak.
Well, I think the genius of this competition, I mean, we hear so much about the new technologies and all the things that folks are doing, from autonomous vehicles to solar to you name it. But this is really a focus on conservation. I mean, this is one of the few competitions that really hits on what Governor Snyder says is maybe one of the best ways to conserve energy is conservation.
The cheapest energy is the energy we don't generate. So, yeah, it is all about energy efficiency, but solar energy and renewables in general can help you win this competition as well. We actually our data is based on source energy use. So that's the energy that actually comes from our utility companies to our buildings. And so if you were to convert to solar, although you wouldn't necessarily be using any less energy, but because you're getting it from a clean source, you're still reducing your what we call an EUI, an energy utilization index, and that's what the competition is based on. So renewable energy is definitely a part of this as well, but this is not just about money, but it's about environment as well.
Well, let's conclude. Even as you're recognizing the 2016 winners, the 2017 competition is underway.
It sure is. So we're, 3 months in right now? Oh, 4 months in right now. So we'll hope that they're doing lots of things to cut their energy waste, because the competition just keeps getting harder. The more competitors that come in, the harder it gets to win. So,
well, it's really a pleasure to be up here for the Battle of the Buildings. We've been talking with Sherry Holman. She's the Executive Director of the Green Building Council West Michigan Chapter. The Green Building Council of West Michigan manages and also hosts the Battle of the Buildings Biggest Losers. Sherry, pleasure having you on the program.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thank you for coming.
You're listening to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Here's more with Kirk Heinze.
One of the best things about being at the 2017 Energy Summit is to see businesses and people we have in the past featured on this show recognized as biggest losers. And that includes Ford Field, the biggest loser in mixed-use category. With us is Fred Reddick. Fred is the Ford Field Facility Director. First, congratulations, and it's nice to meet you in person.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's a great honor to be here.
So you achieved close to a 6% energy reduction in 2016 at the Ford Field Facility. How did you do that?
Well, we did a number of things. First of all, we replaced all our field lights with LED. The year before, we just replaced our maintenance lights to see how they would work, and they worked fantastic. So we went ahead and did the full-blown project. All the concourses are now LED hybrids. We also did light harvesting, so we have photocells outside and inside the concourses. So when it's bright enough outside, the lights, only things lit in the concourses is emergency lights.
What kind of feedback are you getting on the quality of these LED lights?
Everybody loves them. I have not got any negative feedback at all. Players seem to enjoy it. Everybody else that goes down on the field like it. Everybody that's in the concourses, our fans, everybody love it.
One of the questions that always comes up about people who may be late adopters to these technologies, pretty heavy upfront investment cost. But what about return on investment? I mean, they do save money in the long run, right?
Oh, absolutely. I look at everything as a return on investment. I do not do anything with less than 5 years of return.
So in 5 years, you're definitely going to recoup the cost of these lights.
Yeah, I think the lighting project for the field was about 3.8 years.
You also did some things with your water pumps and the speed drivers. Tell us about that.
So our city water booster pumps, we had what was a pressure clay valve before. So I had all my pumps running, usually at 100%. What I did is I put drives on those pumps, so now I only have one pump running, which is a small 15-horse motor, and when the fans come into the building, I have maybe that pump and another pump running, so I'm only running at about 20% capacity.
So what about the other 80% capacity?
So that's an energy saving. So, I mean, we barely need to do that. Before, all of them were just running.
You do have a lot of leased office space for those who haven't been down there. Outside damper system, what is that and what did you do?
We do have over 400,000 square feet of commercial real estate. We're a large landlord as well. So all of our rooftops on the commercial real estate side, we replaced all our outside air dampers with Tamco dampers, which are real tight-fitting dampers. So when the units go down, we don't have leakage coming into the building so that we're not trying to heat or cool excess outside air. So I'm going to start doing the rest of the stadium starting this year. So we're going to move forward. It's a 3-year project.
My guest is Fred Reddick. He is the Ford Field Facility Director. Ford Field was recognized at the 2017 Energy Summit as biggest loser in the mixed-use category. Are there some initiatives that you're pretty excited about looking out over the next couple of years?
Yeah, like I said, we're going to continue doing our damper project. I'm replacing our air-cooled chiller that we use on our milder days so I don't have to run my big chillers with a little larger one and more sustainable. So it's a more energy-efficient model, and I'll get more tonnage out of it as well. We're also looking at some more lighting and retrofits. I'm about 75% complete in the building with LEDs. I hope to be within 5 years have everything LED.
All of this, I think all this planning, all this execution, all of this insight and creativity comes from what you call your green team. Tell us about your green. Who's on the green team? I mean, any of the Lions on the green team?
No, unfortunately, none of the players are on the green team, but we do have some tenants that help us out with that. We're going to try to get more of our tenants involved. We have our director of housekeeping is on that. Our tenant manager's on it. I'm on it. The VP of operations is on it as well. We have most of the operations teams on it. And then we also have our concessionaire, Levy, on that as well. So that we're looking at different recyclables for all the food waste that we have so that we can become more sustainable in that aspect as well.
So, I mean, there's virtually no part of that facility that you haven't got representation on this green team with the possible exception of the football team.
Yeah, but I think they're moving towards that as well. The Lions are committed to sustainability, and I think we're going to keep moving in that direction going forward.
More and more of these professional sports teams are recognizing the importance of sustainability planning in their facilities and are really taking steps forward in that area.
Yeah, I think you're right in that. As we progress in the years, more and more sports teams are looking at that. It is the bottom line does get increased, so when you start doing that.
You guys have become sponsors of the Michigan Battle of the Buildings Energy Summit. I mean, it may seem obvious why you might sponsor something like this, but, I mean, you have opportunities to sponsor all sorts of things. Why Battle of the Buildings?
Because we are part of that as well. We're a competitor in that, and it just seemed right to do so. Like I said, we are committed to sustainability as an organization, and we want to keep moving that way, and this is a great event to sponsor that.
Well, I asked you this when we interviewed you before. I mentioned this, and you had a great comment on it. But this sustainability ethos, we found when we talked to anybody associated with Ford, just the name, whether it's on the automotive side or the athletic side, that there is a corporate commitment to sustainability that starts right at the top.
Yes, there is. I mean, we are a separate entity from the Ford company as well. So the Ford family does own the Detroit Lions. And as the Ford family, they are committed to it, so we're going to keep moving in that direction.
Well, Fred, I want to congratulate you again. Biggest loser, Ford Field, in the mixed-use category at the 2017 Energy Summit. I've been talking with Fred Reddick. He is the Ford Field Facility Director. Great to see you in person, and thanks for being on Greening the Great Lakes.
All right. Thanks for having me.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Here's Kirk Heinze.
The Energy Summit's Battle of the Buildings Biggest Loser in the office buildings category is Meadowlark Design Build, an award-winning full-service design build firm specializing in green building science and custom finish work. With me is Doug Selby, president and co-founder of Meadowlark Design Build. Doug, too long between visits. Congratulations. Great to see you again.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Over 39% energy reduction in 2016. That's a big number. How'd you do it?
Well, really, this is phase one, and this is entirely through improving our building envelope. That is adding a lot more insulation and air tightening. And then also the addition of a modest-sized solar array on the building.
Tell us about your solar array. You were already into solar panels, I think, but then you've gone in a slightly different direction, but you're still betting on solar.
Well, I think solar is a good bet long-term. You know, as the saying goes, it's 93 million miles away in wireless, and every minute about 15,000 times the amount of energy we actually need to power everything on the planet falls on the planet. So. It's a great energy source. It's become very cost-effective over the years, over the last 10 years, really. And we have a variety of different solar types on our building, some of which were made by Dow Chemical, the Dow Powerhouse shingles, which are sadly no longer being manufactured. We really liked the product. And then we also do have some traditional flat panel arrays.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, the shingle thing kind of came, and then we haven't heard much about it. I mean, are shingles being produced anywhere now, or is it pretty much gone largely to panels?
Well, the panels are bang for the buck, are considerably more efficient, except for, in this case, we have a long east face that is wide open to the sun. And one of the reasons we selected the Dow Powerhouse shingles for that project and for others that we've done is that when you're looking for a net zero application, taking advantage of all cardinal directions except for north, of course, is a one strategy. So because we had such a great east solar face on our building, it actually turned out that the bang for the buck on the solar shingles was better than flat panels simply because they were more energetic with oblique light.
So most of that 39% that you realize in terms of energy reduction, would you attribute that to a combination of the insulation and then the solar?
I don't have any hard data on this, but I would say that the insulation is probably a bigger factor in that. I would almost always say that that's the case. That's the first thing any homeowner or any building owner should look at is insulation and air sealing. But there's certainly no doubt that the adding the solar into our building was really producing a lot of good energy. We had our first net zero day this last Monday, net zero work day, I should say. So that was exciting.
You know, it's kind of ironic because when we've talked to you in the past, you've actually built some net zero buildings and you've been involved in net zero projects. Now you can boast that your own headquarters is net zero.
Well, we're certainly trying to go there. It's winter's long and gray in Michigan, so we got a long way to go from there. But we do have phase two coming up. We've been doing energy monitoring in the building, and we installed geothermal heating and cooling. So a lot of exciting things that we have yet planned, and more solar, and eventually we want to get to the point where all of our operations, even out in the world with our vehicles and our job sites, are run off the sun.
You're talking about a lot of investment here and then subsequent return on investment, but a little bit about the role that Michigan Saves, the program, played in your ability to do what you did.
Well, we were fortunate enough to buy our headquarters for a zero-down land contract back in 2010 and 11. For us, the access to capital, especially in our industry, is not always accessible. And we had some major issues with our building. We had 9 or 10 roof leaks and some sagging structure and things like that. So we had some things that we had to take care of anyway. And what the Michigan Saves program allowed us to do is to do it the right way and to get the capital we needed to make that long-term investment. And otherwise, we would have just kept, being able to put Band-Aids on the problems. And so I really was very happy to be able to take at least the steps we were doing to the longest possible, extreme of where we wanted to go with our vision of being a net zero building.
Well, we've featured Michigan Saves on this program. We've talked to a lot of folks like yourself that are very appreciative of that program and want to see it continued. My guest is Doug Selby. Doug is the president and co-founder of Meadowlark Design Build, and they're the award winner in the office buildings category at the Energy Summit's Battle of the Buildings Biggest Loser Competition. You mentioned your vehicles and making those more energy efficient and greener. A little bit about that vision.
Well, I mean, I've had an electric, all-electric, no-gas backup vehicle before. I love driving them. I am watching as the auto industry slowly moves towards electric vehicles and things like that. And really, I see no reason why we can't have mobile solar trailers to provide silent power on job sites, and why those can't plug into the mothership along with our vehicles, so that when we take off out of our you know, headquarters every day, that the people who are driving vehicles on our behalf are doing it in electric vehicles that have been where the batteries have been charged by the sun.
You mentioned phase two after the success you've had with phase one, but I noticed some of your other goals have to do with rainwater collection and landscaping. Talk a little bit about some of the things down the road.
Right. Well, we do want our campus to not only house our company, but also to sort of encompass a lot of the building arts, generally speaking. So we would like to have other types of businesses there. For instance, we'd like to have a zero emissions finishing booth and things like that, so that we do have a wood shop that we operate. So we want all of these operations to start to progressively go net zero, net water use, and also net waste. And you know, it's an ambitious goal, and we're you know, we've put it out there that we're going to be there in 2026, and we'll see if we can hit that goal or not. But we have made our vision statement around it, and to me, having that sort of written down and a plan on it is a good first step. We're actually on plan right now, so we've got a lot of ways to go, and there some of this involves technology that does not yet exist or is not yet commercially available. So we're kind of watching that as well, and we're hoping that we can just produce an excellent example of what's possible in the built environment.
Well, you're obviously walking the talk in terms of your own headquarters. Let me ask you, last time we talked, there were a lot of young folks. Well, you said it wasn't always necessarily the young folks, but are you still finding the trend in as far as green building, net zero, those sorts of things? Is that still accelerating? Has that slowed down? Where are we from a macro sense when it comes to green building construction?
Well, I think we're solidly in out of the early adopter stage and into the early mass market stage, which would traditionally see a hockey stick growth pattern. But I think we're kind of reaching a little bit of a plateau. To be honest with you, it's not nearly as cutting edge, and there's not nearly the rush to get there that there was. But that's just because a lot more people are doing it in smaller ways, and it's becoming more popular. So I think it's generally speaking, it's growing still, but it's just slowing down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, as the LEED, for example, LEED lighting technology gets better, insulation tech. I mean, a lot of these new technologies are being incorporated more conventionally in new home construction.
It's very mainstream now, and so that's heartening to me. Actually, it's funny to see people talking about it less as it becomes more mainstream, because that's us talking about it was a very heady experience when everybody was talking about it too, and so now a lot of these things are like, yeah, people know generally about geothermal and solar and things like that. I would call that a big victory. The market has gone from a couple percent building green to almost 35-40%. So it's very mainstream now, and I would say that anybody who's looking at living in a home for more than 5 or 7 years should most definitely, just in your own interest, be looking at at least the things that make the most sense, like insulation and good heating and cooling and good ductwork and things like that.
Yeah, I think you underscore one of the themes on this program. When things, sustainability and green, things that are good for the environment, good for the economy, become mainstream, that's a good thing.
I always say it's a win-win-win. So, really nobody loses if you do the right thing there.
Well, I've been talking with old friend and good friend Doug Selby. He's president and co-founder of Meadowlark Design Build. Meadowlark Design Build was a winner in the Battle of the Buildings competition, biggest loser in the office buildings category. Doug, great to see you again. And again, congratulations.
Thanks, Kirk.
listening to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Here's more with Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome to the program one of the keynote speakers of the 2017 Energy Summit in Grand Rapids. He is Brett Moss. Brett comes from California, the Los Angeles area. He is the training director for the California-based Net Zero Plus Electrical Training Institute. Brett, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Before we get into the work of the Institute, my first question is, and reminding our listeners, what do we mean when we say net zero?
When we talk about net zero, we're meaning the energy used on site is produced on site. And then that's measured over a one-year period of a time. So it's not enough to design and engineer a building to net zero standards. You have to live in that building and prove it up for 365 days.
And so net zero is a goal that we talk about on this program quite a bit. And then we see that you're net zero plus. I mean, what can be better than net zero?
Well, net zero plus is certainly better than net zero. So net zero plus, the plus are a couple of things. I suppose grammatically it's improper to say plus is, but there is certainly more than one plus. We've got on site about 300 kilowatt hours of lithium ion battery storage. So we can use the additional energy that we're producing with the sun and store that in the form of batteries. These are utility grade batteries, and in the event of, for us, a disaster in Los Angeles is certainly going to be an earthquake, either an earthquake or a utility outage. My understanding is you guys just had a pretty large utility outage. We can continue to operate that building through that stored energy. That's one of the pluses. We also have the ability to do what's called peak shaving. So when you look at your utility bills, sometimes what we see are demand charges. So if you've got large equipment that's coming online, suddenly your usage spikes. That's what's referred to as a demand. And on your bill, you get a demand charge. We can also use that stored energy in our batteries to do what's called peak shaving. And we cut those peaks off. We eliminate or shrink our demand by using that stored energy. We can also use the battery, that stored energy, to participate and help with automatic demand response in our building.
As you well know, one of the challenges for the greater expansion of renewables, whether it's wind or solar or what have you, has been that storage capacity on the grid. But you're using the lithium-ion batteries. What's the ROI? Because those batteries are not cheap.
The batteries are coming down in price quite dramatically. I use the parallel with solar panels. So in my facility, we've got three separate installations of solar. My first solar installation, which was just under a half megawatt, that went into service in either 04 or 05. At the time of that project, the cost of solar panels were just below $5 per watt per panel. The solar panels that we just used to complete the Net Zero Plus project came in probably a lot closer to about 80 cents per watt per panel. So we're seeing dramatic drops in the cost of storage right now. We expect to see continued drops in storage, which will make it much more advantageous, much more economically feasible. I'm a school. So it's important for the contractors that I train, the journey level workers that I train, that those contractors employ, the apprentices that we're bringing up to learn this trade, have a good, solid understanding of this technology. So we have to stay out in front. It's business, you're not going to get ahead by chasing. So my board of trustees understands this, and they are going to make sure that they're out in front. That information, those lessons learned, we're working with other training centers. So there are other training centers just like mine across the United States and Canada. So we're working with some of the other training centers, and the Penn State GridStar program. It's based at the Philadelphia Naval Shipyards to develop curriculum. It's got an acronym of ESAMTech, electric storage and microgrid training and certification. That's another mouthful. But again, that's going across the U.S. and Canada, and that will ensure that in Los Angeles we are not unique, that here in Detroit, here in Grand Rapids, that the men and women that will do these installations will be ready to go.
Yeah, Brett, let's just back up just for a second. We were mentioning your training institute. I want to go back. You've talked about some of the programs, Net Zero Plus Electrical Training Institute. But for our listeners, for context, you're actually training journeyman electricians, but along with electrical contractors. Is that correct?
That is correct. So we are training contractors. We're training the journey-level electricians. We're also training the apprentices that are coming in and learning this trade.
And you've incorporated all of these technologies, which are not only efficient and cost-effective from an institutional standpoint, but they become training laboratories at the same time.
That's correct. So our Net Zero Plus Electrical Training Institute, we talk about it being a living lab. We moved into the building that we're in 2003. It does not look like it did. Again, we installed one of the first large solar arrays in 2004-05. In 2012, we installed what was the first privately owned microgrid in the United States. And then just last year in 2016, we cut the ribbon on our Net Zero Plus project.
Well, obviously, you're making a bet on the future of these technologies. I mean, you're in California. California generally is ahead of the curve. We hear about that all the time in the Midwest. But clearly, you see a demand for this kind of expertise, this kind of training to grow not only in California but across the United States.
Absolutely. Across the United States, Canada, and in fact, the world. In Detroit, for instance, the electrical workers, Local 58, is, I believe, getting ready to do a ribbon cutting in June on their hiring hall. They've taken an existing building, done a very deep retrofit, and it will be a Net Zero Plus facility as well. It will be Net Zero. It will not be Net Zero Plus. Not initially.
Brett, in a few moments you're going to give your keynote address up here at the Energy Summit, but what are one or two of the take-home messages that you hope you'll convey in your speech?
Well, I want to give people a glimpse into what the future looks like. Also let them know the future is here today. It lives in the building. I'll also add we were featured in a PBS documentary. It reran it locally in Los Angeles, but you can certainly get it on the PBS website. Look for Building Below Zero. That's the name of the documentary. It talks about net zero, and then it talks about what comes next. There are a number of net zero buildings. It's getting more common. So again, what's next? And we believe our project is next. I'll also add that the project is almost, I would say, 95%+ privately funded, from within that industry, those union electricians and the contractors that employ them in Los Angeles. This isn't a drain on taxpayers. This is our industry investing in ourselves.
Well, certainly a very exciting prospect for the future. It makes you think that we worry maybe too much about what's going on with one policy or another in Washington, but this momentum, this horse is well out of the barn.
Absolutely.
My guest has been Brett Moss. He is one of the keynote speakers of the 2017 Energy Summit, and he's also the training director for the California-based, I should say Los Angeles-based, Net Zero Plus Electrical Training Institute. Brett, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
You're
tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Here's Kirk Heinze.
The Grand Rapids Brewing Company is the winner of the Biggest Loser Battle of the Buildings competition in the category of entertainment, hotel, and restaurant. And with us is Carrie Veldman. She is the sustainability coordinator for Barfly Ventures, the holding company for several restaurants and bars, including the Grand Rapids Brewing Company and the well-known Hopcat Beer Bar chain. Carrie, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
First of all, Barfly Ventures, we've featured Barfly on the program before, but remind our listeners about the enterprise.
Hopcat is our best known of our restaurants, and we've got, I believe right now we have 12 Hopcat locations throughout the Midwest. I think the furthest one away is Lincoln, Nebraska right now. But we're here today to talk about Grand Rapids Brewing Company, which is the one that won the Battle of the Buildings Biggest Loser Award for our category.
Yeah, I mentioned you guys before we started the interview, right around slightly over 8% energy reduction in 2016. So how did you do it?
We were actually pretty surprised that we won this. We have just been tackling the low-hanging fruit so far. So things that don't really cost us any money, but are things that we do need to think about. Like the kitchen was a pretty big focus. We tend to come in, and I think a lot of restaurants do tend to come into the kitchen and they just turn everything on, just ready for business right away. But we've realized that lunch and late night are two times when we aren't really using all of the appliances that we have in the kitchen, which do take a lot of energy. So we've started to turn off half of our salamander, half of our fryers. The prep oven needs to go off as soon as we're done. Only half of the range. And these things have proven to give us some pretty significant energy savings.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember from a previous interview, you guys place huge emphasis on employee training for these kinds of energy efficiency activities, maybe more so than some. But it seems like a lot of what you do, a lot of your success, hinges on that education.
It does, you're right. Our sustainability program is a pretty big part of our business as a whole. We do mostly focus right now on waste diversion, so that's a big part of our employee training. We divert 90% of our waste goes to compost or recycling, so that's a huge focus. And with that, I think energy savings is something that we also focus on. Right now, it's definitely in the beginning stages, but we've proven that just doing small things can make a big difference.
A lot of people wonder, when you do these sustainability practices in a small business or even a large business, the upfront cost versus how much money you save down the road. Do you guys have any kind of metrics or analytics that you look at in terms of profitability of doing these things?
Well, right now, most of our energy is being recorded through Midwest Energy. They are helping us out a lot with just being able to see a starting point and an ending point. And so that's where we've been able to target when we see, like, big peaks. We can make sure that we try to understand why that has happened, and I think that has helped us a lot. But, yeah, as far as right now, we're just in the measuring stages.
My guest is Carrie Veldman. She's the sustainability coordinator for the Barfly Ventures. We're talking about the energy savings of the Grand Rapids Brewing Company, over 8% in 2016. What about lighting, LED, things of that nature? I know, again, there's a pretty heavy upfront expense, but we've heard over and over again how much you can save in the long run.
We did switch out in the kitchen, so our entire heart of house or back of house, we switched that out to LED lighting. So I think that was also a good part of how we saved 8% last year. We're still working on getting the front of house to be switched out to all LED. Some of the issues lie in the hue of the LED lights, so we're hoping to get a little more technology towards that so that we can give it the right ambiance in the front of house.
A question I like to ask business owners in particular, when you're doing these sustainability things and you win awards like the Biggest Loser, does that have any impact on the people who come to the bar, the customers, maybe younger folks, millennials, who really want to frequent organizations that do these kinds of things? Do you have any sense of that?
I think it does, and a little bit more so to employees. We found that our sustainability program attracts employees that are like-minded, and it helps with employee retention a lot. So that's definitely saving money as well.
Yeah, because it occurs to me, you can educate the employees about how to be more energy efficient, but there might be something to be said for educating customers in terms of how they can do things in terms of recycling, waste reduction, energy efficiency, water use, and what have you, that may also be helpful as far as overall reduction.
That's true, and it does. We've got signs up for compost, recycling, and landfill all through all of our sites, all of our Hopcats and Green Arpies Brewing Company as well, and it does sometimes get our guests to start talking to our staff about what that is and why it's there, and it can be a really good educational opportunity.
Now, in terms of Barfly Ventures in the broader sense, these same kinds of practices permeate all of your holdings throughout. I mean, it seems like this must be an ethos in terms of sustainability and green that starts right at the top of the corporation.
It is, and it has expanded out. Autumn started, I believe, 4 years ago, putting this sustainability program at Irish and Ionia, which is, I believe, the largest Irish or St. Paddy's Day festival in Michigan. There's usually close to 20,000 people that attend, and this past year we diverted, I believe, 93% of what we had from the landfill, which is a huge, huge accomplishment.
Yeah, 90%. I mean, you're almost to the point where you're doing 100% recycling. Is that the goal?
It is the goal. The problem is that some people bring things into festivals, like beads and whatnot, that aren't going to be recyclable or compostable. Seeing the piles at the end of the night and just a pile of about 6 trash bags for 18,000 people was a really big accomplishment.
Now, given the popularity of microbrews and establishments like the Grand Rapids Brewing Company, in terms of actually making the beer, the brewing process, I mean, we've talked to some folks that are also doing some sustainability-related things on that end of the business.
Yeah, we opened up as an all-organic brewing company, actually. We haven't kept that because it was difficult to source all the local ingredients we wanted to, so it was kind of a trade-off, but I think it was the right decision. But then also we have been working on some water savings things with the brewers as well. I can't really speak to brewing on a large scale because I'm not really good at that. Don't do it. but we have figured out ways to recycle some of the water so that we're not just dumping fresh, clean water down the drain.
Now, you mentioned with the Grand Rapids Brewing Company, back to the award winner, some of the things that are planned for the future. So what are two or three major initiatives over the next couple years that you're going to be working on from a sustainability standpoint?
We're definitely hoping that we can switch to all LED lighting in the front of house, just waiting for the technology to catch up with the ambience that we're looking for. So that's definitely a big one. Continuing to compost our spent grain. We work with local farmers that take our spent grain. I believe Rakowski is taking some of it right now. So being able to continue that will definitely be a good idea. We want to feed animals before we make the compost into soil if possible. And being able to have the opportunity for our staff to take this program home with them as well is a goal that we look at. We want our staff to also be recycling and composting, which we're hoping is something that will be a possibility in the city of Grand Rapids in the future.
Well, given the Grand Rapids and West Michigan commitment to sustainability and green, what a great idea to train the employees and then have the ripple effect back home with mom, dad, brothers, sisters, even grandma and grandpas might get into it. Well, congratulations. Again, the Grand Rapids Brewing Company, winner of the Biggest Loser Battle of the Buildings competition in the category of entertainment, hotel, and restaurant. My guest has been Carrie Veldman. She is sustainability coordinator for the Barfly Ventures. That's the holding company that owns the Grand Rapids Brewing Company. Congratulations, Carrie, and thanks so much for being on Greening of the Great Lakes.
Thank you very much.
You're
You're listening to Greening Up the Great Lakes inside MSU today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. Here's more with Kirk Heinze.
Well, continuing our conversation with the award winners at the Battle of the Buildings Biggest Loser competition in Grand Rapids, my next guest is David Shaw. David is the regional energy manager for the University of Michigan Medical School and one of the winners in the category of health hospital was the Michigan Kellogg Eye Center. David, welcome to the show and congratulations on winning Battle of the Buildings.
Thank you, Kurt.
Tell us a little bit about the U of M Kellogg Eye Center first.
The Kellogg Eye Center is really two buildings. There's the building that I focus on is the original building there, which was originally mainly labs and clinical labs. It had been converted over the years to clinical labs, offices, and a variety of other spaces. And during that time, some things had not been kept up as far as with the changes. It hadn't kept up with the changes properly, and we found some ways to save some energy there, actually through the discovery of a problem and trying to solve a problem first.
Tell us a little bit about the problem and the steps you took to solve the problem.
The problem we had was the entryway that is used by the patients entering the building. The other half of the building is more the patient exam area and surgery area. But the entryway, the main entryway from the parking lot, goes through the original building, and the lobby there was always very cold. There's two people stationed at that door to help patients in and out and find their way through the building, and they were standing in a vestibule where the wind was rushing in all the time, and in the winter, as you can imagine, this was not pleasant at all for them or anyone else in the vicinity, and I was asked to figure out how do we fix this? What's the problem? We got looking into it, and we found these areas, as I had mentioned before, that had been converted from laboratory space over the years, one room at a time or one part of a floor. And as changes had been made, the labs originally had a certain amount of exhaust that was required to keep them safe. Because if you're working with chemicals or other noxious or toxic stuff, we want to exhaust it right out. Changes have been made at the room level to return that air instead of exhaust it, because it was now an office or a clinical space. But changes had not been made at the fan, at the exhaust fan. So that was still, the exhaust fans for the building were still drawing as much air as they had been designed to years ago, even though the exhaust needs were not what they really needed to be today. Once we discovered that, and there was another exhaust fan that served just fume hoods that was also had gotten out of whack. There's one of the controls on that had failed in the wrong position for us. Right position for the fume hoods and to keep things safe, but the wrong position from an energy standpoint. We fixed those two things, turned down the general exhaust fans as much as they would go, and fixed the one other exhaust fan and saved over 10,000 cubic feet of air per minute every minute. Those run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we were able to turn down that amount of exhaust air, and 1 cubic foot of air per minute costs us about $1.50 per year. So that added up to over $15,000 of savings just for that original portion of the building.
And in the process, reduced your energy consumption by doing that by about 5%, right?
That's correct, 5%. And we did not have cold air rushing in at the vestibule and kept the patients and the staff who worked there much more comfortable this past winter.
Now, the University of Michigan had another winner in the other category. That was the Medical Sciences Research Building number 3 with an energy reduction of over 20%. Tell us about that facility.
That facility is obviously one of 3 buildings that are all labs. Labs and a few offices, well, offices for the researchers, but it's primarily a lab building. And there's, again, lab spaces with exhaust going all the time through just from the rooms and also from the fume hoods. We also have some animal spaces in there where we care for animals that are used in research. that building was, I earlier identified that as our highest energy use building on campus. We'd looked at various ways, and the decision was made to take a two-prong approach on that that building. We hired an outside consulting firm, Fishbeck, Thompson, Carr, and Huber, to come in and do an energy audit and give us all their information, all their ways of how we could save energy in that building. We do that ourselves to some extent, but we said, well, let's try, you know, we'd had a... suggestions from various quarters to try an outside firm, so we said this is the place to try it. At the same time, we hired two contractors, actually just one contractor, to come in and what we call recommission all the heating, ventilating, and air conditioning systems. That's, I think of it as spring cleaning maintenance. It's that maintenance you do occasionally, but not every day, and you go a little deeper in order to bring things back to where they were designed. Because over time, things drift out of calibration or things fail in an open position. Again, it's safe if we fail in the open position where we're exhausting more than we need to and bringing in more than we need to. But it's more than we need to, and it uses more energy. At the same time, we also had another project going, an earlier project we identified to add occupancy sensors to all the offices in the building. That would turn off not just the lights, but turn off the ventilation in those offices when no one was there. When no one's there in an office, we can turn that off. In the labs, we go 24/7 again, but the offices, we can shut that off. Again, outside air is very expensive to bring in and to exhaust out. So we said, let's shut that off. So those three things were going on at the same time. One of the things our recommissioning agent contractor found, and the contractor installing the occupancy sensors found, was that many of the power supply units that worked the controls for the ventilation in the individual rooms had failed. When they fail, the ventilation controls go wide open. So we were, again, supplying and exhausting much more air than we needed. We fixed all those. We said, let's just do it wholesale on all the office ventilation controls. We just went through and replaced them all. They were all working now. So we fixed that up. The contractor working on the main ventilation equipment and temperature control equipment made some improvements and calibrations there and rebalancing the supply and exhaust from the building. Those all added up at the same time. Then one more thing happened. At the other end of that same complex, we had we were replacing the what we call chillers, large equipment that produces chilled water that we use for air conditioning buildings throughout the complex. Medical Science Research Building 3 had not been connected to those chillers. They had their own, which were old and a different technology that was less efficient. We had another project going on when we finished the replacement of the chillers at the other end of the complex. We also ran a pipe, set of pipes from the other end of the building to MSRB3 and connected that in. So we're not only able to reduce the energy use through the reducing the amount of exhaust air we had and the supply air into Building 3, but we were also able to then tap into a much more efficient air conditioning source from the other end of the complex. All those things combined just in the best way to enable us to save over 20%, and I don't remember the dollar figure, but it was very large.
The University of Michigan had two award-winning facilities at the Battle of the Buildings competition. One was the University of Michigan's Kellogg Eye Center, and the other was the Medical Sciences Research Building number 3. My guest has been David Shaw. He's a regional energy manager for the University of Michigan Medical School. David, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you very much, Kirk.
That was Kirk Heinze with a sustainability-focused Greening of the Great Lakes segment. Thank you for listening to MSU Today on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR. To hear segments from today's show and more MSU Today content, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on 94.5 FM and AM 870 WKAR.